I didn't even know when the coronation was.
Are you a Canadian, Ken?
Well, you could ask me that. So Father Cristino, I was talking to my brother, Father Dan, and he brought up something interesting to me in a conversation. We're talking about you, so full disclosure, behind your back. And he said you had a great love for the monarchy in England. And I've never heard somebody been described that way, let alone a priest. I've never thought of that. I've never thought of my great affection to now King Charles III. Share with me why. Share with me why. And is this true?
Well, yes, it takes some nuance. I think your little intro there has probably scandalized half of your viewers. If they had any respect for me beforehand, they've lost it now. But I think we need to clarify why I do feel that way. And it has to do with actually how you said that or asked your question. You said that I have a great love for the monarchy in England. But that is not, strictly speaking, the case. King Charles is the king of Canada. Canada, our home and native land, is a constitutional monarchy. It's not just that we've agreed to put him and his mom's faces on our money, and then it ends at that. The whole system of our government is based around the system of government that has arisen in the Westminster parliamentary system of having a head of state who is a monarch, and who also answers to a constitution. And so we have a system of government that sees that we all have a responsibility to something beyond ourselves that is embodied in a person that answers to someone beyond him or herself, which is God. Even if that is lived out poorly, even if that looks like it's superficial, it is the structure, it is the system. And I just believe that it is disingenuous to call oneself a Canadian or to claim to be patriotic and simultaneously be flippant about or dismissive towards the monarchy that guarantees the system of government that we enjoy in this country.
With the coronation that has happened in the last little couple days ago, I think some people struggle a lot with the monarchy and particularly the person of King Charles III. And maybe would say, you know, we got to do away with all of this, do away with the monarchy, do away with the king. Because of maybe his personal failings and in some respect, like what would you say to that?
Well, I would say that this is probably an unpopular opinion, but I don't think Western civilization has recovered from the execution of King Louis in France that was part of the French Revolution. I think the French Revolution continues to reverberate throughout Western civilization, and that kind of attitude that I don't like this figurehead, so let's get rid of him. That is a revolutionary attitude. Now, our neighbors to the south are proud of being revolutionaries. They left what they did not like and came and, I think would have to admit, took over some other people's place and made it their own. Specifically not to have to have anything to do with a king. What I find a little bit silly about the whole thing is the president of the United States might as well be a king. I don't think there's any difference. Now that I've been involved in the papal visit and I see how all of that goes on and the security detail and the protocol, the Pope is the vicar of Christ on earth. So maybe people don't have a hard time believing that that's appropriate for the Pope. It's no different for the president. The only difference is they elect their king every 4 years. So I don't think we can actually get it out of our consciousness that there will be a person in whom we invest this authority. But in a republic where you think that now everything's equal because you have chosen the people in power who you have invested power in, and they are serving you, in a monarchical system, which I think has been perfected through a constitutional and parliamentary balance of power, you have someone not in whom the people have invested power and authority, but in whom it is said that God has invested that power. I thought I had personal affection for Queen Elizabeth II. Her late majesty was the Queen of Canada for all of my life, and practically for two other generations' lives. My granduncle, my kokum, my Cree grandmother, her eldest brother, from 1975 to 1979, served in the office of the Lieutenant Governor of Alberta, which is the Queen's official representative to the provincial legislature, and who signs all of our legislation into law. And I have had instilled in me, from my upbringing, a respect for that office. And I think that it signifies something of greater importance when we look at the chain of command, that the crown embodies a power beyond itself that is alleged to come from God, and that that is his direct access point into the administration of our day-to-day life. At least the concept, even if it is sullied and confused by the office holders and the fallen human beings who get in there and maybe mess it all up, the concept remains. And I think as a Canadian, if we are going to defend having the country that we have, the starting point cannot be desiring to dismantle what makes it what it is.
As you approach this view through the Catholic lens, some might say, well, there's a great could there be a great contradiction here? Because we're talking about a king who's also the head of the Anglican Church, if I'm using the correct language. And it's not the Church of Jesus Christ. So how do we reconcile this? We have a king who's Anglican simply because somewhere along the line, someone chose not to be Catholic because they wanted to get a divorce and remarry somebody. So how do we have a great love or for this institution when the foundation of it is based on a rebellious act?
Well, the institution is not based on a rebellious act. A rebellious act has infiltrated and corrupted that institution. And when there is corruption in institutions, we have to ask, what do we do? Do we abandon the institution? Do we dismantle it? Or do we reform it? And I think that if you reform something, it requires dialogue, respect, listening, debate, and humility. Now, when you are the monarch, I suppose humility might be hard to come by because you know that all power, at least earthly power, has been invested in you. But where we have to reconcile as Catholics with the monarchy that still constitutionally reigns over the country in which we live is that there is a problem inside of it that is a theological problem. And where there are theological problems, there need to be theological solutions. Not revolutions and not political rebellion. The answer to rebellion is not more rebellion. So King Henry VIII rebelled against the divine law. And it's, I think, bearing upon us to consider the what St. Thomas More said before he was beheaded by the king whom he served. I die the king's loyal servant, but God's first. And that is a good example. And then Her Majesty, Her Late Majesty, Queen Elizabeth, received Pope Benedict XVI in 2010 to a state visit in the United Kingdom, where he spoke in Westminster Hall, which is very rare for other heads of state to come and do so. And he spoke of the sacrifice of St. Thomas More, whose successor, the successor of his executioner, was sitting right beside him. And she listened to him very graciously and gave him a platform to speak. There's no doubt that she was aware of the text of what he was going to say before he said it. And then he was brought to venerate the place at which St. Thomas More was executed, or at least sentenced to death, in that very chamber. That is an openness to a conversation. And I don't know, I think we would have a different conversation as Catholics if one or two kings from now, one of them were to decide, well, look, the Anglican Communion is falling apart, and it actually is, objectively speaking. It does not represent anything that it once did. And I am actually very taken by the truth of Catholic doctrine, and so I, this king, declare that you no longer need to be the head of the Church of England to be the king of United Kingdom, and so I'm going to be a Catholic. There's nothing stopping that from happening. Now, people could say, oh, that's just a pie-in-the-sky fantasy, and there's no point ever imagining such a thing. Why would there be anyone whom we would limit the possibility of being converted to the fullness of the truth of the Catholic faith within the Catholic Church if we are going to proclaim the gospel indiscriminately to anyone with whom we can share it? So that's why I don't just outrightly dismiss it, even as a Catholic priest, because there is error historically that perdures inside of the institution.
The possibility of the King of England becoming Catholic, isn't that something that we should want? Isn't that something we should desire? And can't we even say this is God's will?
I believe it's God's will that we would all become Catholic and that we would all live the fullness of the Catholic faith, from the lowest servant to the highest king. And that's actually what has always been the beauty of Catholicism. Many over the centuries have said that that's what convinced them of the truth of the faith, that kneeling at the same communion rail was this king and this peasant, because both professed the same faith and lived in one holy Catholic and apostolic church. So we have to believe that and want that. And I will say about the proclamation of the gospel, I don't know how many people, after they see a pope step out on the balcony of St. Peter's in the Vatican and say his first few words after newly being elected, I don't know how many of those people then later tune in to watch the inaugural mass of him taking on his pontificate. But I suspect it is many, many fewer people than who watch the white smoke come out of the chimney and see who's the man that comes out on the balcony. They don't care about the inauguration of the pontificate. Catholics, some Catholics, probably not even the majority, watch that with affection. But even many Catholics don't care. Well, he's the Pope now, and they just leave it at that. But I think many, many millions more, I don't know the numbers, tuned in and watched the coronation of His Majesty and were completely covered in majestic, beautiful imagery. The hymns that were sung, the building and the architecture in which these things take place, just all of the ritual is in itself a proclamation of the gospel. Even if it's being entrusted to weak, sinful people who do a poor job communicating the truth of that gospel by the quality of their own life. That's why in a monarchy, you don't pay attention to the office holder as much as you do to the crown. That's what we always talk about. We talk about the crown. And that was, for me, the enduring image from the funeral of Queen Elizabeth II. I was watching her casket be wheeled through the long parade that it was taken until it arrived at St. George's Chapel, where it would be interred. And just before they lowered her casket into the vault, the crown, the scepter, and the orb, the physical signs of her office, were taken off of the casket. The body of the woman was all that remained and was lowered into the ground just like everyone else's body. But the crown was set up on the altar, where it awaits to be placed on the next head that will carry it. That is imagery that speaks to us, that should remind us of the dominion of God over all of the earth. That crown endures, and it properly resides on that altar when it's not on someone's head. And when it's removed from someone's head, that head just goes down to the ground like anyone else's. And that, I think, is worth appreciating and reflecting upon and being instructed by. I do a lot of work now with Indigenous reconciliation, and the main point of tension is always the status of this country, its legitimacy, that we even exist, what are we doing here? Those kinds of conversations happen all the time. And I guess I have just personally arrived at the conclusion that we can't keep having it both ways. We can't keep demeaning the existence of this country and suggesting that it shouldn't belong and besmirching the crown and the king and apologizing for existing and then just carrying on, happily going about our business. That's what's happening in this country right now. We just bend over backwards saying we're sorry for even coming into existence and being confederated as a constitutional monarchy under the British monarchy. And instead of saying, no, that's what we are, that's not going to change. If you are in this country, we should be proud to be in this country. We should be patriotic. It is a virtue to be patriotic. We don't ever talk like that. But then here we still are. We still pay our taxes. We still vote in elections. We still keep living here. And we still keep carrying on. And I think that that schizophrenia is harmful to society. So if we are going to stay being the country that we seem to enjoy being and exercising the freedom that we enjoy exercising, then we should appreciate all of what it means to be the country that we are. And that means we are a constitutional monarchy, that King Charles III is the king of this country, that a parliament is established in his name and exercises with his power, whom we elect members to go and represent us and fight to defend for us freedom, which facilitates human flourishing. Those are all good things. And if we're going to keep enjoying it, we have to stop knocking everything that makes it what it is. And find a way to happily and with reconciled hearts and consciences live together as neighbors and fellow citizens.
You mentioned a word, virtue, in there. Being patriotic is virtuous. Why? What describe this virtue?
So patriotism comes from the Latin word patria, which is father, right? The pater means father. So patria is like referring to your country as your fatherland. And it is the recognition of the fact that where we live and our connection to our land, where we're from, should have importance to us. And I have various ways of appreciating that reality, especially as a person of indigenous heritage. And we talk about this all the time, that our connection to our land is important to us. And having had it taken away or modifying the way in which it can be lived on and enjoyed has been a source of profound pain and difficulty and frustration for countless generations of indigenous people who have lived through that since the European settlement of these lands that have produced the country we now call Canada. But to my earlier point, we're still here. So if we agree that it was bad that it ever happened, then we need to go to some other place in the world that once belonged to another group of people that has had it taken over by whoever's living there now. This has been the history of the world. The history of the world is, because of original sin, conquest. We just go and conquer whoever we can conquer and take over their place. But if you take it over and then don't even show gratitude for having it and demean the people that still are there and insult the existence of what has taken over, then it's duplicitous. The antidote to that is patriotism, which is gratitude for having what you have, the recognition that it is not yours, that it is a gift from God, who alone has dominion over all of the earth, because it is his and he has made it by his own hands, as it says in the Psalms, and that we receive it with gratitude and treat those with whom we live on it with respect and love. That is being patriotic. And so I think we need to reclaim and restore a sense of that without the guilt and shame that is associated with how where we live now came into being. We need to instead say, how can where I am living now be transformed into a place that upholds human dignity, justice, peace, freedom, love, and ultimately the worship of God?
There's a line in our national anthem, and it goes like this: God, keep our land glorious and free. What does that mean?
It's first and foremost a prayer. It's a recognition of the fact that this is his, and so we are asking him to preserve it. First, gloriously, which is a recognition of the immense natural beauty that we enjoy in this country, and that we ask that it be free. That freedom is a prerequisite for peace. There isn't peace if there isn't freedom. And so we enjoy immense freedom in this country. And that is why we basically live at peace. And there are many places in the world that enjoy neither of those things. And so I think our national anthem reminds us to address God with gratitude that we do enjoy that here. And inasmuch as we don't, inasmuch as there are people who are suffering any form of injustice, especially at the hands of others or at the hands of institutions that are not functioning as they ought to, then that needs to be rectified. And that is also what we are asking God to assist us in accomplishing.
And when we speak about free, we're not talking about the ability to do whatever we want whenever we want, are we?
No. That is not freedom. That's licentiousness. That's what that word means. It means to have the license to do as you wish. That is a vice, not a virtue. We believe in, not licentiousness, we believe in liberty, which means not being restrained from being able to do the good. A well-formed conscience makes us possible to do the good to pursue and serve the common good. And liberty makes it possible for us to act out what our well-formed conscience dictates. And that's why they have to work together. And I would say, mostly, until recently, we've enjoyed that unequivocally in this country. But I think I'm watching us head in a direction where we're willing to either relinquish or have taken away both liberty and the capacity to properly form our conscience. And then that poses a threat to this country being what it should be. And if we tolerate that, and that happens here, then the people who historically have suffered for this country to be established have all the more reason to be frustrated. And that's where my hope is to say, if no one plans on leaving, and we all decide we're going to keep Canada glorious and free, then we better live grateful to have that glorious freedom, and not take it for granted and insult the gift that it has been to us, which would be a slap in the face of the people whose freedom was certainly diminished, if not destroyed, by the creation of this country and being what it is.
So, Father Crescino, any closing thoughts on the coronation of King Charles III?
Well, only just that I thought it was very beautiful, and I thought that it was a moment to project to the world, to a very large audience, important and meaningful Christian symbolism and imagery that I hope helps in others provoke thoughtful conversation like you and I have had today. Even if there's misunderstanding or disagreement among your viewers or those who hear it, that it would still have been an occasion for us to think about some of these important themes.
Well, I appreciate your thoughts. I appreciate your time. Thank you for being here. And thank you, friends, for watching. Comment below. Share with us your thoughts on our conversation. I'll read every comment. I might not respond to everyone, but I'll read everyone. But thank you for watching, and God bless you.
Thank you. God save the King.